Welcome to the Fort Brox Crypto Podcast. I'm your host, Neil Alonzo, with my co-host, the most awesome, wonderful human, Brandon Heath.
Fort Brox.
Every time, man. So today, we have a special episode.
Yeah,
it's
we
the
do.
Best episode. I mean, I know you hear me say that every time, but it's because every episode is the best episode.
So far, so good.
That's what I'd like to think. But today, we are talking to a former IRS agent, Brandon.
Yeah, the James Bond of IRS agents.
Dude, I mean, I know he's got an older name, Melvin Crilly, but with that comes wisdom.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. Like, Mel's awesome. He's just good people.
Yeah.
And for an IRS agent, if you had any, you know, previous, you know, conceptions of what type of personality, Mel's just good people, you know? And I'm excited to hear, because tax-wise with crypto, I mean,
he takes care of my personal taxes as well, ever since you introduced me to him. And
so that's the full disclosure, too.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I guess we'll get into that.
We'll get into that a little bit more, but yeah.
Yeah.
But you like Mel, huh?
He's great.
So I'm excited because
straight shooter.
Of all the things we get to ask somebody who was working at the IRS, who is now an enrolled agent.
Yeah.
You know, he handles audits, handles tax filings. So,
yeah.
You know, I'm looking forward to getting into it. But before we do, we have our disclosures.
Disclosure time.
So we are not financial managers, or no, financial advisors, my apologies, wealth managers, or brokers. Do not construe anything that we're doing as investment advice, or in this particular case, tax advice. This is, we are talking to somebody who's a professional in tax, and from their standpoint, you know, they are professional in that field, but we are not.
Yeah.
So do not construe anything on our end as investment advice or any of those things. So there's our disclosures.
Yeah. Signed, or his, delivered. Even though he is a tax consultant, is a tax preparer?
Yeah. He's an enrolled agent. You have to Google that, because there's a difference between him and a
agent,
CPA.
Yeah. Anything that he says is also not
financial advice. Correct.
Yeah.
Please contact Mel, you know, if you find what he has interesting.
We'll leave it in the show notes as well.
So. There you go. So yeah, let's kick it off, man.
Okay, cool.
So just so you know, Mel was a former IRS agent, and he's a professional tax service provider. And so, Melvin Crilly, Mel, is what we call you for short, right? That's what you go by?
That's what I go by.
Okay. Not just your friends, but everybody.
Correct.
And you hate it when I call you sir.
Oh, well, yes.
Just so you know, Brad, he hates being called sir.
I did not know that.
He always...
I didn't.
No, he doesn't like it.
Yeah.
But Mel, being a former IRS agent, well, tell us a little bit about yourself before we dive in and really start grilling you.
Okay. Yes, I spent approximately 10 years with the Internal Revenue Service as a revenue officer and revenue officer group manager.
Okay.
They're the knuckle draggers they send out to collect the tax and collect the unfiled tax returns, unlike the revenue agents who audit your tax returns and come up with ludicrous amounts that people owe that can never be collected.
You can say that?
Why not?
I don't know. I like.
He doesn't work for him anymore.
Exactly.
Knuckle draggers. That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I mean, sort of. The phrase, I like the phrase. So why a knuckle dragger?
Well, basically, when I first started working as a revenue officer, I had a group manager, we'll go unnamed, used to use that terminology. He said we were kind of like the enforcers for the mob. We had to go out and get the money and get the returns.
Oh, I could see that.
Damn. Yeah. Damn.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I've known you a little bit now, Mel. I didn't know that.
Yeah.
That's kind of...
So how do you guys know each other?
Mel? Oh, yeah. In full disclosure, that's actually a good question, Brandon.
Yeah.
Mel, we work with Mel on our business of Fort Brox.
Yeah.
And I've worked with him on the business of the real estate side of things.
Yeah.
And one of my other partners works on his real estate portfolio with Mel. So in full disclosure, that's how I met Mel, because he provides great service for us.
Yeah.
So, and he provides service for you now too.
Yeah.
So in full disclosure, we do work with Mel.
Yeah.
So we're already we like them a lot already.
Absolutely.
So.
The check will come out next week.
Yeah. So, you ready to dive into some crypto?
Yeah, let's give it a shot.
All right. So, initially, we'll start off slow because we have a lot of questions, as you know. What are your thoughts on crypto?
Well, initially when I first heard about it, like most people, I was skeptical.
Okay.
You know, it looked like it was a Ponzi scheme or, just a scheme in general that would probably last very short period of time and burn out because people would realize that, this isn't what it appears to be.
Okay.
But having been around it now for a while and I'm dealing with you in that area, it is not a fraudulent thing. It's a hard thing to understand. And once you take the time to grasp a few of the concepts of it, then you realize that, yes, it's like the stock market is what I like to use an analogy of. You invest in it, but you have to invest in it for the long term, not the short term.
Yeah,
because it is volatile.
It's like the stock market or like a Forex, where it's a currency. Yeah, the old CEO of Goldman Sachs just came out and said that his entire outlook on crypto has changed, because at first he thought it was a Ponzi scheme, and then now he's like with maturation and
well, so that word's been used a lot, Ponzi scheme, with crypto. What about crypto would even make people jump to that conclusion that it could be a Ponzi scheme?
Mostly because they can't understand how something that isn't backed by gold or real estate or a hard asset can hold its value.
Yeah.
And once they can understand why it holds its value and that it can be used to purchase and to sell things, they get more comfortable with it. It's educating people.
Yeah.
To the point.
So what was the turning point for you that made you go, you know what, this is viable, this is valid?
Well, not only from, the readings that I have done on it, but, when the IRS decides it's something it wants to tax.
Yeah.
And not just close down.
Yeah.
Then this is legitimate because they're looking to make their money on it.
Yeah. Okay?
And governments have tried or have their own cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
Some governments like China, because they cannot control it, have outlawed it.
Yeah.
So
well,
it can't be something that is just going to be a flash in the pan if all of these countries now are either utilizing it or controlling it or trying to control it in one way or another.
Well, yeah.
What are you going to say, Brian?
I was going to say Chinese, they offer now the digital yuan, and that's why they outlawed every other currency, because they are trying to control cryptocurrency.
In their own way.
In their own way.
Yeah, in their Chinese way.
Just like, this is the only crypto you can buy.
The only digital crypto. Yeah. Oh, that's funny. So, this is a selfish question.
But yeah, that's a good way of saying it. Selfish question.
Selfish question, because we are in the mining business and other miners are hopefully listening as well. How is the IRS wanting to tax crypto from mining? The act of mining.
Okay. The act of mining is being taxed in a couple of ways.
Okay.
When you mine, you're remunerated for completing the blockchain in cryptocurrency of the blockchain crypto that you're mining.
Okay.
When you receive that, that's income.
Mm.
Okay? And you have to track it. You have to track how much was it worth when I received it.
Not how much it's worth a month from now.
No.
It's the moment we receive
it. The moment you receive it. Because you're going to be taxed on that as income.
Okay.
So that's where you have to quantify what it was worth so that it can go on your return to be taxed as income.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, later on down the road, when you decide to sell that same crypto, you're going to pay capital gains. So again, you have to revert back to what it was worth when you received it versus what it sells for ultimately.
Mm-hmm.
And the difference is what you're going to be capital gains on.
So is there a difference to mining of how we got to file our taxes versus just purchasing?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Shed a little light.
When you purchase it, again, it's like the analogy with the, excuse me, which one?
He's a busy guy. It's yeah. Probably the IRS calling, you know, going, Mr. Crilly.
Yeah. Can you, we're going to send a couple knuckle draggers after you for what you just said on that podcast.
Yeah, yeah.
We are listening.
So.
What?
The purchasers of crypto.
Yes.
Okay. They're much like the purchasers of stock.
Okay.
They have to track what the value of that crypto is, just like what the value of the stock is when you purchase it.
Okay.
Then when they sell it, they have to track what it's worth on that day, the spot value.
Mm-hmm.
They get to subtract from the, or add to the purchase price, their cost of purchasing it, or the cost of selling, if there is any.
Gotcha.
Otherwise, it's a straight either capital gains or capital loss.
What happens in the case where, you know, let's say the crypto we mined, or actually we'll use it for the purchasers because that's how most people are listening. Somebody purchases it at a buck, you know, it's within the calendar year. And then at the end of the year, you know, before the fiscal, right at the end of the fiscal year, it's worth, you know, 50 cents. Are they able to write down that loss? Because it's treated like stock, they can't?
No.
Okay.
Unlike a stock, okay, again, as long as you sell it by the end of the year.
Okay.
And remember, if you just hold it, there is no tax.
Right, no taxable event.
Tax doesn't happen until you sell it.
Right.
Okay. So at the end of the year, if you were to sell it and you had a 50-cent loss on it, okay, you would be able to treat that as a passive activity loss.
But only if we sold it, the act that making it a taxable event.
Right. But if mm-hmm. you're just holding it and it goes down, well, you have no gain or loss yet because you haven't suffered it yet.
You haven't. And so if it went to 10 bucks and we bought it at a buck, we don't have to worry about the taxable event until we actually sell it. So we don't have to worry about that gain of $9.
That is correct.
Okay.
What if you're I don't know how far into crypto you are, but if you know about like some of the swaps or some of the exchanges offer coin to coin exchanges, is that a taxable event in that case?
That's actually, yeah, the next question on here. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yes, in fact, there is a tax associated with that. Let's do the swap first, trade one type of cryptocurrency for another.
Yeah.
That's the same thing as a sale and a purchase.
Gotcha.
So you have to, again, show the sale versus your purchase price. And then the new coin becomes a new asset. What was it valued at the time?
Oh, we might be doing a lot of taxes this year, too.
Well, so that's a perfect time for that question, too, is the exchanges don't track this for us.
No.
So how would we go about tracking that? Or what do you recommend we do to track that personally?
Okay. The exchanges will normally issue you some sort of a report at the end of the year showing, you know, your purchases and sales, but they're not going to probably cover, you know, the gains and losses. They won't.
Yeah.
And if you're the type that have numbers of these and a number of wallets.
Which we are.
Okay. Yeah. That becomes a real headache, an almost impossibility for even the preparers to do. Okay, so what I would recommend, or what I'm hearing is recommended, is that you use a service such as, I think it's called Coin Tracker.
That's it.
Coin Tracker.
CoinTracker.io.
Okay.
CoinTracker.io.
And I would go on there first to see, you know, what's needed. But basically, if you utilize that at the end of the year, not only will they have tracked your purchases and sales, they will actually issue you the forms that are needed to be attached to your tax return.
Okay. Your 1099C or your...
Well, it's...
what is it? F or E or one of those?
It's an...
There's so many, isn't there?
Yeah, yeah.
No, and there's new ones now.
Schedule
too.
D. But,
schedule, oh, yeah.
The other one is the 8949, which actually tracks it. It's what is used to carry it over to the Schedule D.
Gotcha.
But that's for personal. That's not for a business.
That's not for a business.
So but if we were doing it as a business.
You take that same information and you put it on the business return, but it's already done.
So it's like a personal QuickBooks, but just for crypto.
Right.
Okay. When you say it's already done, what do you mean it's already done?
It's already, when you get it, the form, the 8949, will already show when you purchased it, what you paid for it, what you sold it for.
Yeah.
And if there are any costs involved, my understanding there shouldn't be, but you then would have a report on that. That makes it much easier for your preparer than to take that info and put it on your business return.
Hey, cointracker.io, if you're listening to this podcast, please either send us a referral check or just sponsor us. Thank you.
You're funny, man. So, having said that, I mean, how diligent is the IRS right now about this?
Yeah.
They are getting more and more diligent about this.
Okay.
In fact, they have hooked up with a coin service, and I'm trying to look for that real quick, and have worked out with them a way of going through all the wallets.
Yeah.
Okay.
And identifying who has made, what U.S. citizens have been selling, buying any type of cryptocurrency.
Yeah, because it's all, most of them are on public ledgers.
Yeah.
So once, you can just go through.
Once they identify that, they send out a letter giving you 30 days to respond by filing an amended return before they issue out a CP 2000 notice,
okay,
which says, hey, you had this unreported income, okay? So they'll say, okay, it's sold at, let's say, $100.
Okay.
They're going to say, you owe the tax on the $100. They're not going to say, you know, you purchased it at this price and your capital gains is this. Your capital gains is going to be based on the total amount you received.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. So you really want to, if you get these letters, get a hold of your tax person, get your returns amended so that you can at least take your purchase price, and then depending on the type of situation you're in, any expense that you have against it.
Okay, mm-hmm. That makes sense.
Okay, and when you're looking at this, you have investors, you have miners, and then in the miner situation, they may have leasehors.
Yep.
Then you may have things like airdrops.
Yeah.
You might have staking.
Yep.
Okay. Well, the airdrops are simply when a hard fork happens, you may end up with another type of cryptocurrency given to you.
Yeah.
And at that point, that's income.
Okay. Wow. They have a lot of these NFT play to earn things where you buy an NFT. So if you buy an NFT, I guess, let me just break this down into two questions. Buy an NFT, that's a taxable event, right? Or sell one, correct?
Purchasing any type of crypto currency is never taxable.
Oh, okay. Sorry, not purchasing it. So if you were to sell your NFT, then that's, you
yes.
Know. Okay. But what you're saying is that if you get an NFT, like you buy one or you get one airdrop to you.
There's two different things.
Okay, yeah, those are two different things.
All right, well, so a lot of these NFTs are, they have roadmaps to either, that they are either play to earn games where you receive a certain crypto from owning this NFT, or you're getting airdropped new NFTs or different layers to your NFT. So those are all taxable events. How do we stop this? No, I'm just kidding.
Any airdrops are going to be considered new income to you.
Because it's like free money. It's
pretty
a gift.
Much.
Yeah,
it's like, okay. It's not a gift.
Okay.
Well, it's not a gift.
No, because
it's like winning a sweepstakes.
You're mining, right? And you get a hard fork, and they give you, well, that's part of your income to that, to yourself or your company.
Okay. Got it. Okay.
Okay. So you have to claim it as income.
The value of it.
Correct. On the day that you receive it.
So, for instance, there's popular NFT Bored Apes, mm-hmm. right? Its value when they first launched was, let's just say, $100. But, you know, you bought it in Ether. But now it's worth, you know, a couple hundred thousand, in some cases a million. So if you have one or you purchase one that's worth $1 million, do you have to pay taxes on $1 million?
You never pay tax on a purchase.
Exactly.
Okay.
But what if it's airdropped? I mean, that would be a hell of an airdrop.
Well, if it's worth $1 million and it's airdropped, it's income, you're going to pay income tax on that.
Which would be how much? Or what's the range?
It depends on
how you file, huh?
Yeah. Right, on the bracket you fall into.
Mm.
Got it. And so when they sell that, they just are subject to the capital gains.
That's a second tax.
That's the second tax.
Correct. Yeah.
Damn. Okay.
Hey, why are we getting double taxed on this?
Well, they're two different events.
it's similar to stock in that way.
Yeah, if you were to be paid stock as part of your income,
mm-hmm.
you'd be taxed on it
at
the time you receive it. So then later on when you sell the stock, you're going to get taxed again for the capital gains on that or loss. And the other way that you can end up having income is that staking where you lend your cryptocurrency as collateral for loans to be issued out.
Yeah.
I have questions about that.
You'll get interest on that. That interest is taxable as interest income.
Okay.
So we're staking TOCO right
currently
now.
Currently, we're in a 30-day lockup period for TOCO.
This one, cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
And it's returned something like 25%
change. 25 over a year. So it's like going to be 2%.
So having said that,
for the month,
is it being treated as interest?
We're not lending it.
We're not lending it. We're just staking it.
When you stake it,
yeah.
How are you doing? What's the mechanics?
You go into within the app that we're using. You go into a staking pool.
KuCoin.
Yeah, you delegate it to be staked, which means that you just put it inside of a pool and then you lock up that amount, and then it. So I don't think they're lending it.
Well,
but
what are you putting in that you're being remunerated for?
Our initial crypto that we own,
that we
purchased.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
Okay. So you are putting that up for them to use to lend out.
Not necessarily.
Where's the not necessarily coming from?
Well, because it's not about them lending it out with staking. Sometimes it's used as like voting delegations, or sometimes it's...
Well, here's the thing. What they're using it for may not be of any consequence to us as a taxpayer.
No. Yeah. It's the fact that you're being remunerated for the use of that.
Got it. Okay.
And normally that's considered interest.
Yeah.
Regardless of how their use case is.
And so you'll be claiming that as interest on your return.
Yeah. Okay. I get that.
We don't want to.
No.
We don't want to get that.
I don't want a stake anymore.
Well, you know we do.
Yeah. Well, okay. So my question for you then to follow that up. If you move the same type of cryptocurrency from one wallet to another, is that a taxable event?
Are you changing anything? In other words, let's say you had 3 Bitcoins and you want to move it from one wallet to another.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Want to move it from my ledger to my new Ledger Nano.
I would think as long as you're not getting anything, you're just moving it. It'd be like moving it from one bank to another.
Regardless if the value went up or down since we first acquired it.
Well, no, because you're not getting anything. You're not selling it. You're not getting the money that it's appreciated to.
But we're still being charged transaction fees or gas fees to move our...
That's fine. Then that's part of what you're going to add back to your bases when you sell it.
Got it. Okay.
So we're able to write down those.
Yeah, and that's why you need to track all this.
No, we get them. Sweet.
There was one other area that, in your mining that you do, and that's you lease.
Yeah.
Meaning that you lease back as a miner the platforms or the, what are they called, racks.
Yeah,
right.
So you pay individuals for the use of that.
Yes.
That is a lease. So those folks then have to count it as rental income.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, and it has to be taken on their return.
Well, in our case, we're issuing out the 1099 NECs, the non-employee compensations.
With a rental income, yes.
From our end. I mean, this is our operation. Other mining companies might do it differently.
Yeah. We're just giving away state secrets over here.
So, okay. Getting back to some other questions that we have regarding this. Obviously, you answer one question and we have 10 more.
Yeah.
But, okay. So, our crypto portfolio. What do you think about us being able to borrow money against that?
Well,
do you know of any products that do that currently?
No, I don't, offhand. Mm.
Okay.
Okay. Borrowing against it has no tax consequence.
Do you have any thoughts on it?
In what regard?
That's a good point. In regard to how it'd be taxed, would it be just the same as us using our home?
Exactly. It's just a loan. Loans are never taxed.
Okay.
So... In step with that, Coinbase was trying to launch a product called Lend, I believe, and the IRS put a squash to it. I believe it was the IRS, maybe the SEC. We'll put it in our show notes.
Yeah.
But it got squashed because they didn't want them to be, ooh, didn't even have to put the sound effect in.
Yeah.
But they didn't want them doing that. What do you think would make the SEC or IRS not want?
They're probably not licensed as lenders. Maybe that's what they needed to do.
Oh, okay.
I don't know, since I'm not familiar with the case.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. Okay.
See, a lot of these, like the banks, are real nervous because there isn't real concrete legislation, rules, and regulations in place. It's fluid right now. It's being developed. Although it's been being developed since 2014, I don't know why it's taking so long, but it's still fluid and it makes the banks nervous. And because they rely on their regulators and they don't want to do anything that's going to be looked at by the regulators as something out of bounds. And then without clear guidance, they tend to shy away from anyone that's in the crypto business.
Well, as you know, we had our own issues trying to get a bank. Just to let us, we weren't trying to do anything with crypto within the bank. We just wanted to pay for our cell phone bills, office rental, and purchasing our hardware that we use for mining, and the banks were turning us away. What's funny is because they would show us in their policies that we were lumped with marijuana and CBD, which I shared with you. Whatever. But then after we were done talking with any of the bank representatives, they would always talk our ears off asking us questions about it. But I mean, is it just as simple as that? They don't understand it, so they shy away from it?
They're not shying away because they don't understand it.
Okay.
They are institutions that run on rules and regulations.
Okay.
If they don't have a clear rule and regulation on the type of banking you want to do, they're going to shy away from it because they don't want to get stuck, being looked at as feeding, illegal drug monies or, any type of arms dealers, those type of things. But the funny thing is, a lot of them now are working on developing their own units within the bank. I know Chase.
Yeah.
And a few others now are developing their own.
And yet they say no to us.
Yeah.
It's just kind of funny.
I think they anticipate that the regulations are coming. And as soon as they do get codified, we'll say, then they will launch their own people, you know, their own units to handle that type of transaction.
Yeah, because the bank that, you know, started banking us, you know, it's not a plug, it's just it is what it is, but we are grateful to it. It's a Silicon Valley funded, VC-funded group called Mercury Bank. They were one of the ones that, you know, started banking us simply because of the fact that, you know, they're forward thinking in that space. But I mean, they're backed by Andreessen Horowitz. I mean, a number of those Silicon Valley big VC funds. So
yeah,
what makes their regulatory side of things any different from a big bank like Chase, Bank of America, Wells Fargo, Citi, any of them?
All I can say on that subject would be that the bigger they are, the more recalcitrant they are. They're not flexible.
Gotcha.
They're used to doing things a certain way. And until they can see regulations that give them the opportunity to go any other way, they're not moving.
Mm-hmm. Gotcha. I mean, yeah, it makes sense, sort of.
I mean, there are some other countries that are, I guess, more forward-thinking, like El Salvador.
Oh.
They're using it. Oh, okay.
Just to specify, everything we've been talking about right now has just been United States, North America, correct?
Correct.
We haven't been talking about this globally yet, but now we're going to start diving into a few questions.
Well, I know you're not an international tax guy. You're not the James Bond of taxes.
Yet.
But,
Yeah. Obviously, he's been learning too.
Yeah, for sure. If you don't know specifically that country, it doesn't matter. You know, we don't either, so.
So, somewhere such as Portugal, right? Do you have any idea how they might be different than the U.S.?
Well, from the limited research I've been able to do on Portugal, they are very crypto-friendly.
Mm-hmm. What makes them crypto-friendly?
They have no taxation on crypto.
Okay.
Yeah.
Meaning everything we were talking about when we were mining in Portugal, you know, Portuguese resident,
mm-hmm.
we wouldn't have to claim that as income tax when we receive our rewards.
And that's a nice thought, but no, that's not true.
Okay, so then clarify, what does that mean then?
You got to realize,
unless you gave up your
all
U.S.
citizens must pay tax on their worldwide income.
Gotcha.
Okay, yeah. So they have to report all their worldwide income. Okay. So if you were to start an operation in Portugal and the money raised in Portugal only stayed in Portugal, did not go to a U.S. citizen and was not brought back to the United States, like to a U.S. holding company or parent company, then no, it wouldn't be taxed by the U.S.
Got it. Because people get real creative with what you just said.
Yeah.
Think, well, could we do this?
Well, could we do this? Bezos and Musk and all those dudes.
Amazon, Apple, they know what they're doing. I mean,
they know how.
In Sweden, Microsoft and Amazon have those big data centers.
Yeah.
You know, so obviously, you don't just run
Apple's
that through
a big player and
they're much bigger
as well.
Yeah.
And then the owners and the investors in that, they make their money on the stock.
Yeah.
Okay. The stock goes up when your worldwide operations is doing well.
Right,
it doesn't mean that the money in Portugal, let's say they had a company there, was coming back to the U.S. It's just that company is doing extremely well on the European front. So their stock is going to go up.
So these laws actually does incentivize companies to want to be an IPO.
I think the U.S. is trying to work with other countries to
Squash that.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I mean, why would you not? Because just saying, okay, so we went to Portugal, we started a mine, we got a large holding over there, we didn't disperse it to ourselves, but instead what we did is we took a loan out on that those earnings
that are just sitting over there. So you know I love you for that.
So then you don't get taxed on the loan, you know, and then your collateral, you just give them all the crypto that you...
Is that school of thought valid?
No.
What about that makes it not valid? No, no, I get it. That's where my mind was going.
That's how, like, Bezos and Musk don't pay income taxes because they have all their holdings in stock. Then they just borrow against their stockholders.
Well, Amazon's based in Seattle. They don't have income tax.
Oh, that too. But I'm saying, like...
No, no, I got you. For
federal taxes.
So in Brandon's scenario, is that valid?
Well, let's go back to the scenario.
Okay.
What are you borrowing against?
The crypto.
In Portugal. That's all based in Portugal.
Okay. Yeah. The minute you borrow against that crypto, it's yours. You're saying, hey, this is mine. I want to get a loan against it.
Oh, okay.
Unless we kept it in Portugal.
No, even if you keep it there, if you're borrowing against it as a U.S. citizen, the argument could be made that, hey, you're recognizing that as your stock. Hence, it's your income that you're borrowing against.
I get it now.
Yeah. You have to be bigger, like BP, where you just get slapped on the wrist when you... You know, spill a little oil.
Well, I would think, and it's a speculative on my part, if you were like Apple and you had that Portuguese operation, your stock is going to go up.
Yeah. If we are an IPO, if we're not.
Well, just say.
Yeah.
Your stock would go up.
Right.
So you could borrow against it, okay? But once you do that, you know, it may be considered as income.
You got to listen to his words. May be considered.
May be considered.
So I guess, you know, and we don't get political. We've talked about this. But politics are coming in to crypto, are they not?
Yeah. See, and I would think that, as I say, you're still an Apple employee and you have stock.
Okay.
Okay. You paid your income tax on it as you got it.
Right.
Okay, so you can borrow against it, and now there is no tax consequence.
Got it.
Oh.
Okay, got it. But when you go to Portugal and you have stock sitting in that Portuguese company, once you claim it to borrow against it, then you have income.
Then that's income, yeah. Got it. That makes a lot of sense.
But at least we still get the ability to borrow against it once we do have it.
Yeah.
Yeah, for as long as you're not trying to not take it in as income.
Understood. Begrudgingly understood.
Begrudgingly. I mean, I was just going to ask, I was just having a scenario in my mind where my wife's Canadian, okay? So, and then she just got her U.S. citizenship. So what if I renounce my U.S. citizenship and then I just get a green card to live here and then I wouldn't have to pay taxes because I'm not a U.S. citizen in the U.S.? I don't know.
I don't think there's any economic scenario whereby I would want to give up my U.S. citizenship just to avoid taxation.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, this is Brandon we're talking about, though. You know?
It's like I tell all my clients.
Yeah.
I would like to pay the IRS $1 million in tax in any one year.
Oh, I would love that.
You know how much money I would have? So,
like if you begrudging me,
yes, I'll pay him the million to have that type of income.
Yeah.
And to live in a country where I can do as much as I can here.
Yeah.
I got you. So we definitely are not treading into the politics side of this. But so having said that, in regards to capital gains tax, how long do we need to hold our crypto till we're assessed a lower rate on our capital gains tax?
That's a good question.
It doesn't work that way.
Come on, man.
Wait, what?
You have long-term and short-term capital gains.
Okay.
Okay. It's based on the holding period. Anything less than a year, you're taxed at your normal income tax level.
Right.
Yeah.
Anything over a year, it's up to 20%, sometimes as much as 28%, but it's normally less than what your income tax level is.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So
that's long-term capital gains, right?
That's long
over a year.
Okay. Well, that answers my question. Okay. Then. Okay. So we don't have to pay as much.
And the other thing that
by like 12%, 13%, something like that.
Whatever your normal
tax rate is.
Tax rate is. Oh,
well. That's awesome. Yeah. Well, depending upon what bracket you're in.
Yeah.
That's for the short term.
But long term, it doesn't matter what bracket you're in.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it does?
Yes.
Okay.
That's how they come up with these brackets.
Gotcha. No, makes sense.
One of the things that some crypto holders are doing, especially ones with large amounts.
Okay.
And they want to sell off some in a year, they will look at ones that they're taking losses on.
Yeah.
Okay.
And they will sell off the ones that they are going to have a loss on to offset the ones they want to sell at a gain.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The other thing that they do is, say you buy a coin for $200.
Okay.
It drops down to $100. You sell it.
Okay.
Take the loss. You can use the loss against your gain. And at the same time, buy back that same one. And you still have your coin and you have your loss.
That's what they call the phantom dollar in taxes.
They call it the wash rule. Okay. If it was stock, it would not be allowed.
Oh.
Loss would not be allowed, but they have not regulated crypto all the same way as stock.
Because it's treated as an asset.
I thought in this last bill they were trying to introduce that as a thing. So.
Of course, Biden is also trying to introduce to get rid of the long-term, short-term capital gains and make it all income tax.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's also doing the 1031 exchange, trying to get rid of that for real estate.
Right, and it cannot be used for crypto at all.
No.
Some people have tried to float that theory, you know, to buy one type and then exchange it for another and not have to pay a gain or loss and defer it.
Right.
Well, no. Only certain things can be done that way. And they're trying to get rid of the real estate, but real estate is the one major one that uses it.
Yeah.
Wow.
But just keeping your money in real estate. So what you're describing is like you buy a piece of property, then you sell it, and as long as you put that money back into a different piece of property, it's not counted as
if you sell it at a gain.
Yeah, if you sell it at a gain, the money, as long as you put it back in directly back into another property, it's not a taxable event.
Another property equal or greater.
And you only have so much time.
Yeah.
Usually it's 60 days.
Wow. And so you better have that property lined up.
Yeah, why can't we do that with crypto, though?
Yeah, why can't we?
Because specifically not allowed.
Oh, but who says?
No. Is it the IRS? Is it the government?
Remember, the IRS is only the enforcers of the law.
Yeah.
And the people passing these particular laws regarding crypto.
Congress and, you know, the Senate and the House of Representatives.
Do you know any tinfoil wearing hat guys that are sovereign citizens? Do they have to do this same stuff? I love those dudes.
In their minds, no.
I got a neighbor. I love him.
No, I get it. Great.
He's awesome.
Okay. So, my gosh. So where do you see banking evolving with crypto?
I think it will eventually encumber it and allow for deposits in crypto.
Yeah.
Okay.
After they create the Federal Reserve coin?
I know, right?
they're talking about it.
Yeah.
Coming out with one right now.
But then the way that they're wanting to do is be more centralized.
Absolutely. Just like the digital yuan, you know.
So, but you think that's where it could head.
It's headed.
Well, that's what we talked about earlier. These banks are starting to develop units within their banks to handle it.
Yeah.
Right. But it's units that they control. It's centralized, not decentralized.
Well, yeah, they would be controlling your wallet, so to speak.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
Just like if you were to go online and do online banking with them. Is that what you're saying? Like they would have
their own currency? Well, I don't know if they'll have their own currency. I haven't been privy to that information. Right. But that's the other area that scares banks is the volatility.
Yeah.
So you deposit a coin worth $100 today, a moment later it's only worth $2.
Yep.
You know? So they have a hard time with those kind of concepts.
Well,
so,
it seems that the prices of crypto are becoming less volatile over time just because there is more widespread adoption in the space, especially through banks and through larger institutions. So I just find that interesting. Just like the Goldman Sachs thing, where before he thought it was Ponzi scheme and didn't like it at all, now he's almost like all in. He's like, yeah, let's do this.
So would there be any difference in a transaction of buying, let's say, a television versus buying a home in crypto?
No.
None?
No. I mean, the point being is that the person accepting it, again, are going to be taxed as income.
Okay. And
the headaches I'd see would be for the mom-and-pop operation. You go on and you buy a cup of coffee.
Okay.
Now, they got to track that. They got to track what it was worth when you gave it to them.
Right.
And then when they sell it.
Yeah.
And are they going to take a loss? And if they're going to take a loss, if that's going to be a frequent affair, obviously places are not going to accept.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So there's got to be something worked out in that, and plus the tracking of it.
Well, I know Coinbase is starting to offer businesses ways to accept.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, crypto, you know, normal businesses.
Yeah.
I haven't used the software, but I would imagine it's more robust.
Yeah. And do you know if the minute they get it, they sell it?
I don't know.
I don't.
Because that would seem to be what you would need to do, unless you're, especially if you're a cash-strapped business.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, where you're just surviving from year to year.
Yeah, because restaurants, I mean, you're doing great, like amazing if you're making 20% margins, like amazing.
If you're still in business in 5 years.
Yeah, if you're even in business in 5 years. So yeah, you'd have to liquidate fairly quickly.
Yeah.
Do you guys just say pizza?
Yeah, I know.
I'm just kidding.
So, okay. So are there any differences with a business purchasing crypto as opposed to a person?
Yes.
Okay.
Let's say you have a corporation.
Okay.
And the function of the corporation is just buying and selling it, okay? Kind of like a stock broker. You may have other people coming in and using your services, and you're making money from that. And you may be purchasing it for the business as well, okay? The difference being is that's all income to the business. Unlike the investor who can only write off what it costs him to buy and sell.
Okay.
A business gets to write off all of its expenses, just like any other business, against that income, regardless of whether it's crypto or it's cash.
Right.
Okay. And the bottom line is what is going to be taxed, depending on the type of entity you are. And it will either be passed through to the owners, or it will be taxed as a corporation. And then when the dividends are issued to the stockholders, they'll be taxed on their income from it.
So, and this has been coming up with questions we've had from potential card partners and some of the card partners we have now, is buying the GPUs we sell as a business, or even businesses doing more enterprise mining where we have, you know, 10 rigs of 12 GPUs, so I got 120 GPUs, or even 100 rigs of 12 GPUs, 1200 GPUs. If they're to buy that and mine and claim that, does it still follow the same rules that we've talked about? It's just more scale?
Yeah, it's still a business.
Okay.
And that's the way you have to look at it. Whether you're Schedule C, you're a corporation, a partnership, you start with the gross income.
Right.
Subtract your expenses, all the ordinary and necessary expenses.
Right.
And then you have either a profit or a loss.
Are businesses, do they have more options in how they could leverage that portfolio eventually, like versus a commercial and a personal loan?
I haven't seen much on it, but I haven't really researched that area.
Okay.
I couldn't imagine in a scenario where they would have any difference, because an asset that you're borrowing against is an asset that you're borrowing against.
Right.
So... Now, the only thing is in some businesses, if you're a new corporation and stuff, it's hard to get loans.
That's true. So this is just a thought process, right? We're thinking about it, given some of the feedback we've received from you. Businesses will match 401ks, right, as a benefit of working for that company. If that business was mining crypto, could they offer that to share with their employees as opposed to a 401k? Or could they integrate the 401k as a way to give them some sort of, you know, some sort of incentive outside of their normal salary?
I think it'd be more looked at as a closer to analogous of a stock incentive or stock sharing type of scenario.
Okay.
Okay, where you're offering that as an incentive to be, stay a part of the company, or as, you know, bonuses type of deal.
Gotcha.
I'm not sure you could put something like that inside a 401k.
But you could offer it to the business, not 401k completely aside. If a business wanted to, you know, mine however much and offer their employees a way to participate in that, they could, and they could write it off.
Yeah, because once you give it to the employee, that's an expense.
Got it.
Mm.
Okay.
Okay.
That's interesting. Does it?
I'd have to look into the more into the minutiae of it, but it would make sense that if you're giving your employees an incentive payment, well, then that's the same as giving them a salary.
Mm-hmm.
It's an expense to the business.
Yeah.
But in the case of matching, let's say they, you know, how they have those matching situations.
401ks, yeah, you write that off as an expense.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's awesome. Okay, so that's something to consider. So, Mel, we've been talking about the states such as, you know, with, you know, capital gains and what's, in, you know, zero income tax. Shed some light. Like, what are our options right now in the United States?
Well, right now there are a number of states that do not have income tax. Alaska, Florida, Nevada, New Hampshire, South Dakota, Tennessee, Texas, Washington, Wyoming, I think Colorado, Montana, and New Mexico. These states that do not have income tax, by and large, do not have capital gains tax either, because they look at capital gains as an income tax.
Really?
Yes. So in those states, you wouldn't be paying them for the income tax or the capital gains tax.
So that's state, at not the on moment. Federal.
No, that federal is, you're going to pay it.
No matter.
Can't get around that.
Yeah.
But the other thing you have to look at in looking at these states is not only do they have an income tax, but cost of living, job opportunities. There are a lot of things that you'd need to look at before deciding you want to move to any of these particular states.
Well, we know New Mexico has that big tax credit for film and entertainment.
Yeah, a lot of places do.
A lot of places do.
But when you get to those states, they also tend to have less services available.
Mm-hmm. Services such as?
You know,
really fast internet.
Oh, gotcha.
Not only that, but highway funds, electrical support, those type of things. So you have to look at, you know, will it be a fit for your type of business you want to move there? If it doesn't have the low-cost electric, you might not want to run a high electrical business there.
Oh, yeah. In terms of mining, yeah,
right.
Definitely.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but in terms of, you know, just a person who's, you know, buying crypto or, you know, part of some sort of mining company and receiving crypto,
mm-hmm.
I mean, those are more advantageous for them, tax-wise.
Yes, certainly a lot more advantage than California.
Cali, where do we know it?
Yeah, Cali, I mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Without going too far down that rabbit hole. I do love the weather and the surf, man.
Yeah,
it's hard to break away from that part of it.
Mm-hmm.
So, Mel, I appreciate all the information you've been sharing. It's awesome.
Big fan.
So we have some questions. They're a little different than our normal questions because, you know, you came from a tax standpoint, which we really wanted to hear a lot about. But where have you been finding your information on crypto?
Well, I've been getting it in a couple of different ways. One, the primer book that you gave me to listen to, since it was a book on take
the age of cryptocurrency.
The age of cryptocurrency.
Yeah.
That was a good primer.
Okay.
But after that, I would say it was a combination of research on the internet. Okay, you can go to IRS.gov.
Yep.
And you could get some information there. Then you'd also want to take a look at some of their revenue rulings, which they'll go into on there.
For those who are just listening, he's just got these paper pieces of paper that he's printed out, and he's looking through it. So Mel definitely is merging old school with new school.
Yeah. Well, to memorize everything in a short period of time, it's kind of hard to do that.
Yeah.
But the revenue rulings 2019-24, and then from there they'll lead you to the other revenue rulings. There's probably two or three others. And the other way I've been doing it is my society, or the CPA and EA societies have webinars.
Oh, awesome.
On all kinds of subjects.
Okay.
And crypto is one of them now.
Uh-huh.
It's relatively, I think, new for a tax point of view, because up until the last 5 years or so, you didn't run into a lot of people that were investing in crypto. So they really didn't have a need for the knowledge and how to apply everything.
Mm-hmm.
I gotcha.
Wow.
Damn. I mean, I love all the information we receive.
Oh, me too.
I mean, for those who want to get in contact with Mel, you can go to his website, which is melcrilleya.com, and that's spelled MelCrilleya.com.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Wow.
I know. That's
we'll put it in the show notes.
We'll put it in the show notes as well. What other ways can people get a hold of you, Mel?
My direct line,
okay,
which is area code 951-850-1168.
All right.
We'll put that in the show notes as well.
Yeah.
Hey, nice. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you very much. There's a fist bump there happening for those who are just listening. Thank you, Mel.
Appreciate the time you spent with me.
That was a lot of info, but I wanted to keep asking him questions.
Yeah, me too.
I just wanted to keep asking questions.
I just didn't want it to run too long. You know, I'm the time keeper.
I get it. But I think we're going to have Mel back for sure.
Please.
And we're definitely going to be probably peppering him in with different things throughout all the episodes, because to always have an understanding of how the tax implications work with a lot of the things we're going to be talking about,
yeah,
I think is going to be wildly helpful.
Absolutely.
And, you know, if for those of you listening, please share in the notes, or, you know, DM us, or reach out to us, contact us. If you have any feedback or requests, because, you know, we can, you know, ask Mel anything, do more due diligence, talk to others, and, you know, just get a wealth of information regarding how things are taxed and how it'll be treated, because crypto, because it is currency outside of just the technology and the utilitarian nature that we truly like, we have to color within the lines on this one, man, because the IRS,
so stupid.
Well, I mean, if you're into crypto now, I mean it's still early, like we always talk about, but because it's so early, you know, most of the people who are really into it like the fact that it's challenging the old guard. And the old guard isn't necessarily what we're after as much as just the evolution, right?
Yeah.
Like, how do we become better? How do we function better? How do we function with more efficiency? How do we do things better from a technology standpoint and a human standpoint?
Yeah.
Right?
There is that that saying, the only way to get better is to play better opponents.
Okay, so how does that apply exactly? I think I'm understanding.
I'm not going to take on the IRS. I'm just kidding. I don't know.
No.
I'm just throwing that out there.
I got you. It's just challenging the way that they've looked at everything, right? So it's challenging lawyers, tax preparers, you know, certified public accountants, banks, businesses. It's challenging all of us to look hard at how we operate, the way we operate, and the type of financial system we've created, and say, hey, how do we make this better? But in a lot of cases, you know, and I'm not going to allude to anything political, but things have to be challenged in a way that seems confrontational in some ways, you know, there feels like a negative force happening, but that's not what's happening here. But by human nature, we seem to take any type of challenge in more of a negative or aggressive fashion.
Mm-hmm.
But it usually takes something shocking to get people to go, okay.
Yeah.
And if a critical mass of people, which is what seems to be happening with the groundswell of all things crypto,
yeah,
it's helping that move it along.
Absolutely.
And it's just exciting times. But I love, you know, getting the understanding of how we have to, again, color within the lines.
Yeah.
Because we're looking to do things on the up and up.
Yep.
There is going to be a lot of, you know, usurious use,
yeah,
or illegal use. But even with the interview that I listened to.
There's so much illegal use with the regular dollar.
Yeah. And that's the other thing.
You know what I mean? Like,
there's so many things that, yeah, people are trying to pinpoint as the problematic part of crypto, but there is those issues today.
Like, if I want to launder money, I would buy a cash.
A Basquiat?
Yeah.
You'd buy a Basquiat.
No, I'd buy a laundromat. You know what I mean?
Hey, you know I love laundromats.
I know.
Do you ever see an owner in a laundromat?
Stand. No.
No, you know why? Because they don't have to go in there.
No.
That is just cash flow.
Yeah.
People drive by, yeah, it and they think, oh, I'm not going to buy a laundromat.
Yeah.
That, you know, again.
Mm-hmm.
But different schools of thought. But coming, yeah, back to all things crypto, I mean, it's exciting.
Did you ever see the movie Stranger Than Fiction?
With Will Ferrell.
Yeah.
It's one of the few performances where he actually is, you know, having to act more.
Yeah, I mean, there's a couple, but yeah, that one for sure.
You know, I was a native San Diego person, so I do have my affinities towards, you know, Anchorman.
Yeah, for sure.
But anyways, there's a point you were making.
Yeah, he was a tax guy in that movie.
Oh, that's right, Harold Crick. That was his character's name.
Yeah,
yeah, he was dope.
Yeah, that was
actually
a cool movie.
Yeah, that was a cool movie. I like the soundtrack.
Oh, good soundtrack.
It was a really good soundtrack. But Mel.
But every time I think of Mel being an IRS.
You
agent.
See Harold Crick?
Yeah, kind of.
It's kind of cool, man.
Yeah.
I mean, if he was Harold Crick, well, he was in a band, like he said.
Yeah.
And Harold learned how to play a guitar.
Yeah.
You know, so he does have a creative bone in his body. So for all, you know, people thinking that IRS agents have no souls or creativity,
yeah,
Mel is proof in the pudding that that's not true.
No.
No, he's got a creative soul deep down there.
Yeah.
And I think you have to be when you're running numbers all the time. It's just a different type of creativity, right?
Yeah, just go in, clock in. You know, I think that's sort of what he did.
Yeah.
That's what it sounds like.
Well, we also talk a little, well, knuckle dragger part.
Yeah.
That was cool.
Full disclosure, we use him. I mean, we talked about it on the podcast.
We mentioned it, but you just want to be super transparent, don't you, Brandon?
Yeah.
It's because you got that heart of gold, zero malice in your heart.
This is the end. And so if you didn't hear it by now, you know.
You just wanted to make sure that they did.
Yeah.
Yeah. I love how transparent you are.
Yeah. Thank you.
Well, I know we don't talk about it enough in a lot of cases, but again, the emotional side of investing.
Yeah.
We talked about, I think, a little bit with Tyler, but even on the side of taxes, you know, sometimes people get stressed out about it. But if you're playing, again, this is the phrase I keep using, but coloring within the lines.
Yeah.
If you're doing what you're supposed to do, you know, it's just going to make your investment journey that less stressful.
Absolutely.
And so we're big fans of that, being mindful about the situation, because we have enough negative thoughts that probably go through our lives every day. So this is just another way to avoid that. We want to know, be educated, so that we can handle how we need to go about filing with our crypto.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's more of a hurdle right now, but, you know, there's going to be products and different services that people are offering.
Is there a product that, like, for people that are home filing or any sort of that nature, like,
well, you know, we're somebody, building our own ledger,
yeah,
for people,
yeah, I know that,
so you
for
know.
Sure. But I'm asking, and I don't know the answer to this question, and I can possibly look it up and we can put it in the show notes. But
what's
is
that?
There, because he talked about going to irs.gov, he says that he
Coin Tracker,
he's been on a couple websites, but how would a person say, like, I wasn't into this at all from our end, or I was just filing by myself, like, what are some good resources? So
yeah,
do you know anything off the top of your head?
I mean, that's one of the things that we hear from card partners.
Yeah,
we share our spreadsheet,
yeah,
for our tracking.
Yeah,
right. And that was one of the things people were very appreciative of.
Yeah,
there's no automated solution for that yet. We're trying to create one eventually.
Yeah.
But I don't know of anything offhand. I mean, we've had to resort to the spreadsheet style. I mean, the cloud spreadsheet of everything, because you have, but it takes so much work. It really does.
Yeah. I'm just thinking back to early part of this year where I was trading a lot because the market was hot. And then
you're just like, you got to keep track of that. I mean,
it's going to be fun.
Well, if anybody has any thoughts or comments about that particular topic, please share in your show or share within the comments.
Yeah.
And or DM us or contact us. We'd love to hear from you.
Yeah.
But Brandon, that was awesome.
Yeah. I'll see you soon, man.
Yeah. So if you found value in this show, please share with others. If you'd like to be notified when new episodes become available, please subscribe on whatever platform you're listening to or watching from. We would like to say a big thank you to ADU West Coast in Seal Beach. They provided us with the podcast studio. They turn underutilized garage space and backyards into rental housing units. So you can find more information about them at aduwestcoast.com. They've been great people to us, and we're more than appreciative of it. And for people who like cash flow, ADUs are a good option.
Yeah.
This show has also been produced by Wizard Cats and Vocal Visual. So we thank you for listening to the Fort Brock's Crypto Podcast.